This is the Stamfords podcast at the Stamfords Travel Writers Festival at Destinations in Olympia.
Ladies and gentlemen, before Vesuvius erupts, please welcome erupting onto the stage to give us tips on how to travel safely. Please welcome Lloyd Figgins.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to see so many of you here today. You know, I do a lot of talks all around the world, and this has got to be my favourite travel event. And the reason for it is because the audience is full of travellers. And all of you guys are the people that actually make it really special for me to come up here and talk about what I'm good at, which is keeping people safe when they travel. So you heard about it in the introduction. I am a former police officer. I'm a former soldier. I'm a former security advisor, although I still do a bit of that work. And I'm a former expedition leader. So I have done all that thing about climbing up mountains. And let's see, is our clicker working? Clicker. We have a technical issue with the clicker. Anyway, I've done all the climbing up mountains thing. I've crossed the deserts and I've gone through jungles, and I've even been known to row across the odd ocean. Nowadays, however, I specialise in keeping people safe when they're travelling overseas, which means my work takes me often to some of the more remote and hostile areas that perhaps you really wouldn't want to go when you're on holiday. And I'm talking about places like Mali, Syria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Swindon. The other thing I do quite a lot of is do a lot of work with the media. And I often get to talk to the media, not when something good has happened, but after something quite tragic has happened. And this is often the wrong way round, as far as I'm concerned. Really, the media should be talking to people such as myself whilst people are thinking about going travelling, before they're going on their holiday, rather than waiting for a tragedy to occur. The other thing that I'm really quite pleased that I do nowadays is I'm chairman of the Travel Risk and Incident Prevention Group, or the TRIP Group, which is a combination of risk managers from across a wide variety of industry sectors who have come together not to look at what the problems are with travel safety, we know what they are, but actually to have a look at the solutions and how we can actually work together in order to make travel safer for everybody, whether they're a business person, whether they're on a gap year, whether they're backpacking, or whether they're on holiday. So I want to take you, we're all here, we're all travelers, we like to go traveling, and I want to take you on a journey. I'm going to tell you a story about how my world has unfolded over the last 20 odd years. And I'm going to take you to Colombia. And Colombia back in the 1990s, in the late 1990s. And in the late 90s, Colombia was, well, a war zone. There was a big war going on there between the Colombian National Army and the FARC guerrillas. But something else was also happening in Colombia at that time. And there was a change. And we were starting to see a change in government advice that some of the areas which were once deemed off limits were now starting to open up again. And tour operators, adventure travel companies, some of the people you might have booked with, and expedition organizations all want to be the first people when these destinations open, when the Foreign Office says it's okay to go there, they want to be the first to offer their customers, their clients, the opportunity to travel to newly opened places. But before they can do that, they need people like me to get boots on the ground, to do the risk assessments, to make sure that it's actually safe to do so. So in the late 90s, I was sent out to Colombia, and I learned Spanish when I was at school in a teacher who was called Mr. Chigi. And Mr. Chigi was a phenomenal Spanish teacher, and I thought I was doing really well in Mr. Chigi's classes. And when I got to Colombia, I met the team who were going to be assisting me through the jungles on the route that we were going to explore for an expedition organization. And I met my team, and it was made up of two characters and a donkey. And there was Lionel here, who's on the left, and Mario. And I started conversing with them. Now, Mario didn't speak Spanish. Mario only spoke his native tongue, which was Kogi Indian. Whereas Lionel did speak Spanish, but hadn't been to any of Mr. Chichi's classes, so couldn't actually understand a word I was saying. So therefore, I needed to bring in somebody who I knew, who I trusted, and also was fluent in Spanish. And I had a friend, still have this friend, and his name is Maverick. Now, Maverick's not his real name, but when I first met him, he was training to be a helicopter pilot, and the only famous pilot that I knew in those days was the Tom Cruise character in the Top Gun movies, so his nickname was Maverick based on that. This isn't my friend Maverick, this is Tom Cruise, by the way. My friend Maverick looks like this. This is us when we were doing a similar thing in Vietnam in the early 90s. But Maverick is a phenomenal negotiator. He is fluent in a number of languages, and he's also a great navigator, which is what you need when you're going into the middles of the jungle. And so we set off on this trek, looking at different routes that we would be able to take and for expedition companies to take their personnel on. And we did all our risk management stuff. We notified the British Embassy in Bogota where we were going, what our route was, when we were intending to be back. We had very limited communications in those days. Mobile phones didn't really exist. SAT communications were really, really expensive. So we were really going into the unknown, putting our hands in the trust of Mario and Lionel and their grey donkey. But, you know, there's a feeling of splendid isolation when you start going out into these jungles where you know not many Westerners have actually been. And when you're crossing streams day after day in these most incredible scenery where everywhere you look there's prolific wildlife, you get to see toucans and macaws just flying freely around and you think, wow, this is my job to come and recce this stuff. And we were trekking for about 5 days and we were just staying in these tiny communities. And when I say a tiny community, you're quite literally talking one hut where everybody stayed, and we used to string our hammocks up and sleep in our hammocks, and there'd be a few chickens running around, which often doubled as dinner. And then we would then trek on to the next community. And as I say, we're about 5 days into this trek, and we got to this little community, we put our hammocks up, and we got there probably about mid-afternoon. And so we thought, well, there's a bit of spare time, let's use that opportunity to go and take a shower. So we went to the local stream, took a shower, and we were just talking with one another about how the day had gone. And before we knew it, the sun was starting to set. And we thought, well, we'll go back to the community. We're dressed in flip-flops and surf shorts. And when we got back, as we approached this little community, just walking down the hill to it, we noticed that we'd been joined by some other travelers. The only difference was that these travelers were in combat fatigues and had assault rifles. At this point, there's no point in running where you've just got flip-flops and surf shorts on, so we offered them a very friendly hola. Their response chilled us to the bone. The words out of their mouth, the next words out of their mouth were DEA, CIA. And we thought to ourselves, if they think that we're American operatives in Colombia in the 90s, in this area, we're already dead. So we thought, well, no, we're British and we can prove it. So we very tentatively went to my rucksack and showed them I was getting my passport out and gave them my passport. And they looked at it. And you know how your passport photo never looks like you? So they looked at me, looked me up and down, and they passed it around the group. And I thought, this isn't going to end particularly well. And then they asked Maverick to do the same, and they got his passport, and they looked at it, looked at Maverick, and then they said, Manchester. And Maverick said, "Sí, Manchester." Maverick was born in Manchester, so they saw Manchester in his passport. And then they said, "Manchester United." And Maverick said, "Sí, Manchester United." And then they said, "David Beckham." And they said, "Sí, David Beckham." So all of a sudden, they turned from being quite grumpy revolutionaries into being really interested about Maverick in particular. The fact that he was from Manchester, but not only was he from Manchester, He had been to Old Trafford and he had seen David Beckham play. Lionel did something next, which was a pure bit of genius, is he went to one of the packs on his donkey and he got out a bottle of the worst tasting rum in the world. He made a fire and we sat around this fire with these now not so grumpy revolutionaries and we talked. And we talked about the UK, about London, about the Queen, and we talked quite a lot about David Beckham. And we learnt from them about how families had been torn apart by the Civil War in Colombia, how families who had had some brothers from the same family be conscripted into the Colombian National Army, and yet other brothers had joined the FARC rebels. And so it was no wonder that there was so much turmoil in the country at the time, but they wanted to know about us. We wanted to know about them. And that, for me, ladies and gentlemen, is what travel is actually about. It's why we do it, because there is nothing like travel to expand the mind. There is nothing quite like travel to educate us, and there is nothing quite like travel to bring us together. We actually got on quite well with those revolutionaries. They handed us back our passports, they left, and it was only after they had gone that Lionel said that they had been following us all day, which was slightly disconcerting. Now, there was another story that happened in Colombia just a few days after this one, which you can read about in the book, where it didn't actually end so well. So it goes to show that there are dangers there in travel, but really, when we look about it, travel is a safe thing to do. I am not here as a security expert telling you that travel is dangerous, don't do it, because you're going to get harmed. That is not my role here. My role is to encourage you to travel, to get out there, to explore and to discover, but to do it safely. So, when I run travel risk training shops, workshops, and I ask the people on those workshops what are the biggest risks to them, too often we hear about terrorism. Terrorism is really high on the list. And a YouGov poll just last week said that British travellers put terrorism and crime at the top of their list of worries when they are booking their trips, their business trips or their holidays. And yet, the fact is, the reality is, your chances of getting caught up in a terror attack are just 1 in 20 million. You have a far better chance of winning the National Lottery jackpot than you do of getting caught up in a terror attack. But that's not to say that you shouldn't be thinking about the what ifs and how you would react if something were to go wrong. We all need to be thinking about those things. Often people also think about getting caught up in an airline disaster. And again, your chances of this actually happening to you are really, really remote. In fact, Popular Mechanics magazine did some research into this a couple of years ago. And what they did is they looked at survivability rates on aircraft. And to do this, they looked at the data from every single air crash in the United States since 1971. Now, many of you are far too young to ever have been alive in 1971. But this is the data they came up with. So, at the front of the cabin, where they put the business class and the first class passengers, your survivability rates are actually under 50%. But you will be comfortable. Ahead of the wing and over the wing, your chances of survival go up to 56%. But by far and away, the safest place to sit on an aircraft is the rear cabin, where your chances of survival go up to nearly 70%. And you can increase that even further by making sure that you sit in an aisle seat and make sure that you are in a row, no more than five rows away from an emergency exit. And so when we look at travel safety and travel risk management, it's often the small things that make the really big difference. And so that's the mindset we need to apply to our own personal travel safety. And do we have any nervous flyers in the audience? Anyone scared of flying? Couple? Yeah? Okay, well, you'll be really pleased to hear that there is now an app out there that will tell you your chances of being involved in an airline catastrophe on any airline, on any route, anywhere around the world. And it's appropriately named, Am I Going Down? And you can see from this that you would have to fly, we've picked Heathrow to JFK, this route every single day for over 21,000 years before statistically you would come to harm on an aircraft. So terrorism, very unlikely to happen. Aircraft, probably not going to happen to you in your lifetime. So what are the things that we really do need to be concerned about? Well, road traffic accidents. According to the World Health Organization, over 1.3 million people a year are killed on the world's roads. They reckon that by 2030, it will overtake hypertensive heart disease as a cause of death. This is something that we as travellers need to be acutely aware of, because we can make a really big difference to our safety when using vehicles. So what I want to do is I'm going to conduct a little experiment that I need your help with. So I want everybody in the audience just to put one hand up in the air. It doesn't matter whether it's your left or your right. And you, sir. Yep, everyone get your hands up. That's it. And I want you to keep your hands in the air if you always wear a seatbelt when you get into a vehicle in this country. Good. We've got some law-abiding citizens. Keep your hands in the air if you always wear a seatbelt when you get into a vehicle when travelling overseas. A few people coming down now, the honest people. Keep your hand in the air if you have ever refused to get into a vehicle because it didn't have a seatbelt. And therein lies the problem. We become the architects of our own downfall. So unless we are insisting with our tour operators, with our travel providers, with our transport companies, that every person in that vehicle has a functioning seatbelt, we need to be determining that that driver is properly rested, that they're not speaking on their mobile phone whilst driving, and that they're adhering to the speed limits. All of these things are just small things, but trust me, they make a massive difference. And it is up to us to make sure that we are the ones who are making the change. Equally, when we look at the accommodation we might be used, I know many of you are thinking this is quite salubrious accommodation, but it's the small things, again, that really make the big difference. So when we're booking our hotels, what are the sorts of things that we need to be considering? Well, first of all, don't book a room on the ground floor. That's where burglars work. And you don't want a room above the fourth story of a hotel either, because fire brigade ladders will not reach above the fourth floor. And again, so we need to be thinking, we need to be doing the planning on what is going to keep us safe when we're traveling. If there is a fire, we need to know how we're going to get out of that building. So we need to have walked the route of the fire exit before a fire occurs. And we need to count the number of doors from our door to that door, that exit that is going to get us to a place of safety. Because you don't want to get to that door that's going to get you to a place of safety and find something like this. And trust me, when I found this, I went to the hotel manager and I said, listen, this isn't good enough. If a fire occurred, no one's getting out of this building. And he said, no, don't worry about that. He said, if there's a fire, all you need to do is go to the reception and the receptionist will get a key and unlock this. And I thought to myself, in the event of a fire, the receptionist would be nowhere to be found. So, but it's also what's on the other side of this door. When I've done hotel inspections, there might be a big wheelie bin the other side, an industrial-sized wheelie bin. There might be a vehicle parked there. So we need to be thinking about how we're going to extricate ourselves from a hotel. And if you are caught in a fire in a hotel and you can't get out into the corridor because that's where the fire is, what are we going to do? There are still things we can do. We can go to the bathroom. We can put the plug in the sink and in the bath, run the taps and let it all overflow. And then we get a towel, we soak it in that water, and we place it under our door. in order to try and prevent the smoke coming in. And the next thing we need to do, if it's safe to do so, is to go to the window, get the sheets off your bed, and wave them. Because what happens in accommodation fires is the fire brigade turn up, but they don't know which rooms are occupied. So give them a clue and give yourself a fighting chance of getting out of that accommodation safely. And again, it's the small things making a big difference. How many of you use Facebook or Instagram or anything when you travel? Yeah, posting your pictures up there, having a great time on the beach, looking tanned, making your friends jealous. It's not a safe thing to do. And I don't want to be a killjoy, but the stats that are coming from law enforcement at the moment are staggering. Burglars are now using social media as their primary source for targeting properties which are vacant. You might as well stick a big sign on your front lawn saying, property vacant for 2 weeks, if you are posting live stuff on social media. And I'm not saying don't post on social media. What I'm saying is be smart about how you post on social media. Never post your itinerary online. Criminals, again, target this. Always do it after you've been somewhere. So you could say, just had a wonderful time in Da Nang, now moving on. Or, better still, just wait until you get home and then post everything on there and say, just had a wonderful time in Vietnam, best few weeks of my life. Your pictures are still going to look great, but you're not giving away any detailed information. And for those of you who say, ah, but I've got really good security settings on my Facebook account, trust me, I work with people who can get into any Facebook account anywhere within a couple of seconds. And it's not just about how safe your settings are. What about your friends? What are they liking? What are they sharing about you? And so it's really important that when we look at social media, yes, it can be a great tool, but it can also be a hazard as well. And the thing is that when we arrive in a new destination, wherever that might be, anywhere around the world, we don't really know what is normal. We have no baseline of what is normal in that new environment. And that is what makes us quite vulnerable, and particularly to criminals. And this is what criminals are looking for. They are looking for that person who is looking, say, slightly lost, don't know where they're going as they come through arrivals at an airport. And I'm not a police officer anymore, but as a security advisor, I still talk to criminals because I want to find out what it is that they are looking for that is going to help them with their target selection. And so we need, as travelers, to be able to harden ourselves as targets. And the good news is you only need to make yourself less vulnerable than the next person, because that's who the criminals will actually go to. Okay, so we need to think about when we first arrive, we're at our most vulnerable because we don't understand what is normal. How many people have been to Rome in the audience? Just a quick show of hands, who's been to Rome? Most people have been to Rome. Lovely city, Rome, isn't it? What's the driving like? It's pretty bad, isn't it? Yeah? And it takes us a few days of being in Rome until we realize that that standard of driving is normal for Rome. And it's the same thing when we look at crime and we look at all of the dangerous aspects within travel. We need to establish a baseline of what is normal, and then we can establish what the anomalies to normal actually are. Situational awareness is something that is getting really, really bad in society nowadays. Most people walk along like this. So imagine you've just arrived in a new destination and your focus is on your mobile phone, and you might have the latest noise-cancelling headphones, Beats by Dr. Dre or whichever ones are popular at the moment. And so what people have done when they're walking along like this is they have partially diminished their sense of sight. They have lost their peripheral vision, so they can no longer see danger coming their way. If they're wearing headphones or earplugs, they have totally diminished their sense of hearing, which means the only three senses they have in order to detect danger coming their way are taste, smell, and touch. These are not your primary senses for detecting danger. So we need to be more situationally aware and not make ourselves targets to those who might do us harm. So why did I write this book? It's not to put fear into people. The book is actually full of adventure stories. The one I told you about with Maverick in the jungles of Colombia is just one of them. There's also the time I was involved in an aircraft incident, a transportation incident, a ferry incident. All of these different stories are there as lessons. And the key thing about this is I want people to learn from some of the things that I have done in order that they can keep themselves safe. And that's really important because I want to go back to that point about what travel is about. It's about all the good things. It's about learning more. It's about immersing yourself in a culture. But we need to do it safely. So within the book, we have also got safety tips, small things that, again, will make the big difference. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or whether you're a young person going off on their first ever backpacking adventure. And understanding why you're doing something is really, really important. And I think the best example we can use of this actually comes from the travel industry itself, from the aviation industry. Remember when you're on that aircraft and you're flying out somewhere, you're very excited, and then they go into the safety briefing, and that's where most people switch off. That's where we really need to be switching on. And they come to that point where they say, if there is decompressurization within the cabin, oxygen masks will drop down. Put your mask on first before assisting others. But they don't tell you why. If they were to say, put your mask on first before assisting others, because if you don't, you'll be hypoxic in 15 seconds and you'll lose consciousness in 45 seconds and you may never regain it. There's an incentive for getting your mask on first before assisting others with theirs. And so when I've written the book, what I've tried to do is be open about why you need to do certain things in order to keep yourself and your fellow travelers safe. And, you know, Sir Ranulph Fiennes very kindly wrote the foreword to this book. And in it, he put a line which said, Lloyd has been honest and transparent where he has made mistakes. And I purposely have put mistakes in that book in the hope that people don't think because of what I do for a living, it must mean I'm perfect. We're all human. We all make mistakes. But we can also learn from other people's mistakes as well. So I'm going to finish off on essential kit that I take with me whenever I travel. Now, this isn't expensive stuff. I generally try and use things that are going to be practical rather than a waste of money. And one of the first things I always take with me, by the way, the biggest danger to travelers is not aircraft, it's not buses or crashes or anything else like that. It's gastrointestinal illness. That's how sexy it is, okay? It's your diarrhea and vomiting. And the biggest cause of diarrhea and vomiting is bad water. So why I always take one of these things with me, or water to go, is because it will help keep my water safe. 90% of our bacterial and viral infections come from water. So I'm not going to go on about water to go, by the way, because I've noticed that they've got a really big stand just behind you. So what I'd recommend you do is go and see the guys at Water to Go. They will tell you all about their product. But in short, any source of water apart from salt water, it will purify. So you can get your water out of a river, you can get it out of the tap where it says not drinking water. That thing will purify it, okay? And it costs, I think, £25, but from an environmental perspective, you're only using one water bottle. You're not buying loads and loads of plastic bottles. So not only is it a safety feature, it's environmentally sound as well. The next thing I always take with me is duct tape. Now, I have used duct tape to fix or splint broken bones. I've used it to fix tents, fix mosquito nets. It's brilliant for resealing food to keep it fresh as well. So I've used duct tape for all sorts of things, including fixing a radiator hose on a Land Rover when I was in the middle of the Kenyan bush. But don't take a big roll of it like this, okay? Because that's just going to fill up space in your luggage. Get an old library card or a store card, take it off the roll and just wrap it around here. On that rainy Sunday afternoon where nothing much is really going on, just do that. And that just slips into your pocket and it can be with you everywhere that you go. Another thing, going back to the health and hygiene thing, I always take is hand sanitizer. You would be surprised how much this will save you. It kills 99.9% of all bacteria, and it's cheap. Why wouldn't you take it with you? And another thing I always take with me, and this is a security device, again, really simple, really cheap, you can make it yourself, and that is a door wedge. They are apparently available without Lloyd Figgins written on them, but I've never seen them. But when you're in your hotel room, even if someone has the master key to that hotel room, because it could be staff that might want to get into your room, if you have got the door wedged from the inside with one of these, they are going to find it very difficult to get into the room. And what I really recommend is that you actually put two in place, particularly where there's a bit more of a gap under the door. Again, they are available without Lloyd Figgins on. And then finally, the piece of kit I would take is a dummy wallet, okay? So this is, if anybody was to mug you or to hold you up, a dummy wallet, a dummy purse, you have something that you are willing to give them. So I'm going to give this to a member of the audience down here, and I'm just going to, you've just mugged me, you've taken my wallet, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I do not know of any criminal who, when they hold you up, stands there and says, hold on a minute, I just need to check your wallet. They take it and they run in the opposite direction. So could you tell me what is in that wallet, please?
There's a Santander bank card.
Yeah, what's the expiry date?
Oh, I haven't got my glasses on. It's expired.
Okay, so how long ago did that expire? A couple of years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. So that's a 2-year expired credit card. So all they see is a Santander credit card. What else have you got in there?
What's that? A One World Traveller's card.
Okay, so there you go. It's
oh, here we go, yeah.
Got your glasses on now.
Oh, that's expired as well.
So basically, I'm giving them things that no longer have any value. Any money in there at all?
Oh, yes. We've got some Kenyan shillings.
How much?
A lot. 5,400.
5,400. Is that a lot in Kenyan shillings? No, it's not. But to somebody who has taken your wallet, they will think they have some gain, okay? Therefore, they are less likely to do harm to you. So always put a dummy wallet within your travel safety kit as well. And on that note, you know, mobile phones are something. I never travel when I'm going to remote or dangerous regions. I never travel with a smartphone because it has a value to it. I always take an old Nokia phone that has call and text capability. I put a local SIM card in it, and you know what? No one wants it. Even if you get mugged, they don't even take it. So don't go with your smartphones, because they are desirable items and they have a benefit to those who do you harm. And one last thing I would say is that people often get picked up by criminals because they are looking lost and they've got the big map out and, you know, the guidebook, and they are looking, well, like tourists. So one thing that I've only just got hold of today, and it's in my back pocket here, is a map. Now, this is from a company that I met today. So this is the Gorge de Verdon, okay? This is a map which is on rainproof fabric. Now, splash maps actually do these for cities as well. And so you can go onto their website and choose where you're going, and you can get a map that folds up to next to nothing. You can stick in a back pocket, or it can double as a bandana, it could double as a headscarf, it could double as something you put around your neck, but it is not going to stand you out as being a lost tourist, because you can just look at the bit of the map you need to do. So again, little bits of kit that don't need to be expensive but are exceptionally useful. So I'd like to thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to leave you with three bits of advice. First of all, get smart. Do your research. Think about the environments that you're going into and what those dangers actually are. Secondly, stay safe. When you are traveling around, be situationally aware. Think about what is around you, who is around you, and what they might be doing. And if at any point you think you're in any form of danger, identify places of safety, places that you can get to if you were in danger. And that might be a hotel, it could be a police station, it could be a place of worship. Don't forget that jewelry stores are really good places of safety, because they have CCTV, alarm buttons, and shutters. So always think about those sorts of things that might be places of safety. And thirdly, ladies and gentlemen, my last piece of advice would be buy this book. It's full of adventures and a lot of these safety tips that I've given you today. We're going to just do a quick question and answer session now. If you don't get a chance to ask a question, then I'll be signing books over in the Stamford area over there, and you can ask me whatever you like as you pick up your book. But thank you all very much indeed. Thank you.
Any questions? Pop your hand up if you've got a question. Well, I'm going to ask quickly. You've got some expired cards in there. I know when I was a kid, I was always told to cut old ones up. Is there anything anyone can do with an old card?
No, I mean, really, in that environment, so this is only really in a travel environment. You're expecting to lose that. Even if that was taken from me, I would still be calling my bank and saying, look, I've lost this card, it might have some details on it, but it is expired. And when you call your bank, they'll say, thank you very much for letting us know. And that is about it.
Here we go.
You said about making yourself the least vulnerable, but there's a lot of women in the audience here, and I'm wondering if you have anything to say about how women might actually make themselves less vulnerable, because obviously, I mean, even with the terrorists, they've been attacking women first, so we are more vulnerable. We can't avoid that.
Yeah, you know, absolutely, and there's something that we use, and certainly from my previous government experience, we used to use this quite a lot. And it's something called the OODA loop, okay? O-O-D-A, okay? And the OODA loop stands for observe, orientate, decide, act. And so my recommendation, this works really, really well for anybody, but particularly for female travellers, have found it to be a really good way of recognising what the danger is. So the first thing is to observe. Have a look around. This is the situational awareness thing. Have a look around who might be dangerous. Often people will give themselves away through body language. If at any point you are uncomfortable, then you orientate yourself away from that person. And then if they do come closer to you or you do feel in danger, the D stands for decide. Make sure you have already got a plan in your mind as to what you're going to do should it move to the next phase, and then the A stands for act on that. And that could be to run away, it could be to scream loudly, or it could be to actually get hold of somebody closer to you and say, look, I'm really uncomfortable with this situation, will you help me? But too often people get into trouble because they don't ask for help. And it is a case of making sure that if we do feel vulnerable, don't be afraid to ask for help. And equally, people are often afraid of making eye contact with people who they might think will do them harm. I would say actually make eye contact with them. Let them know that you've spotted them, okay? And then get yourself to a place of safety and have those prearranged places of safety in your mind. Don't forget, airports, by the way, are actually quite secure environments because you have law enforcement there, you have security personnel. When you step outside of that arrivals area, It's a free-for-all. So what I always recommend, particularly for solo female travellers, is find a coffee shop or a little bar within the airport, within that secure area, and then make your next plan as to what transport you're getting on before actually getting out into an area where you're going to be, a lot of people are going to be saying to you, oh, come with me, taxi, do you need a taxi? I can take your bags, yeah? So do it all in a secure environment. And that would also include when you're in a hotel room, think about your planning ahead and then implement the OODA loop as well. One down here.
You talked about sort of hotel tips and things. Have you got any camping tips for safety?
Camping tips? Okay, so hotel tips, one thing. Camping tips, another good thing. Depends where you're going. But one of the things I would recommend, and again, if you're a solo traveller, is think about actually setting up a perimeter around your tent. So you can do that really, really easily with things like old cans. So it's almost like, it's not necessarily setting up a tripwire, but it's a perimeter that if anything comes within that circle of your tent, you're going to be alerted to it as well. And the other thing with tent safety is always make sure you've got a way out of your tent. And if there was a fire, for an example, it might not be the front door. So one thing that I always keep with me when I'm camping is a sharp knife, because sometimes you might have to cut your way out of there and get out. But again, with camping, perimeter first. Think of layers of an onion. Security is all about those layers of the onion. So you can have a perimeter around your tent, then think that you could be able to lock your tent from the inside, but if there were a fire, you can still get out because you've got something sharp that's going to let you out, but no one can get in. Does that help? Great.
Firstly, thank you so much for coming along. I go travelling quite a lot, and I do go travelling on my own, so some of what you've said I already knew. Quite a lot of it I didn't. So for me, thank you very, very much. But my question is, you've given us, particularly ladies, some really good tips for trying to assess and get out of dangerous situations. But if the worst were to happen and you ended up in a situation, there was nowhere to go, you were on your own, perhaps it's at night, and you're faced with one or more potential attackers, are there any particular things that people could hold on to? Because in that situation, you're just going to go on adrenaline and your mind's going to go blank. Are there perhaps one or two tips that you could give us, please? Just say, look, just keep this in mind and then just act on that and hope for the best.
Yeah, definitely. And so similar to the OODA loop, the line I would use for this is time and distance between you and what might cause you harm. Okay? So if you're always thinking time and distance, it means that people can't get too close to you and you're thinking about how much time do I need to react. Now that could be, we're running out of time, but you start going into the fight and flight responses. Think about flight is always the best option. If you can run away from something, run away. I work with a lot of former special forces, former intelligence officers, and we all do the same thing when confronted with danger is look at our opportunity to run. The best bit of kit that I actually take with me that wasn't up there is actually a pair of running shoes or a pair of trainers, because I want to be dressed in something that is going to allow me to get away from a situation quickly. But then I am always thinking time and distance. So if someone is coming towards me aggressively, I'm not going to stand my ground. I want to keep that time and distance between me and them. Okay. If it comes to fight, what you've got to be thinking is, they have already decided in their mind that rule of law does not apply to them. They have already gone through that process in their mind. So if you go into a fight situation, you have to do it wholeheartedly, and it is no holds barred, and it is whatever you've got to hand in order to use as a weapon. And what you're trying to do is change their mindset. You're putting them into a mindset where actually they're not going to win this. And if you can do that, you have a much better chance of getting out of it. One last thing I'd say, if there's no more questions, is if you do decide to buy a copy today or you buy one, we do have on social media, if you take it on your travels and you take a picture of the travel survival guide, we will repost it and we will put it out there, and we have a whole community out there at the moment who are taking pictures of the Travel Survival Guide in some very weird and wonderful places around the world. So follow us on Twitter and on Instagram, and maybe one day you'll see your photo of your copy of the book up there. But thank you all very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.